this is Kim Rhodes. Let's go back to the best.
Hey, Grace.
Yeah, David?
Do you want to go back?
Back where?
Back to the best.
Back to the best?
Back to the best.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Back to the Best. I'm David.
And I'm Grace, and this is our podcast where we talk about all the best things from the 90s to the 2000s, which is also known as the best times.
To all our first-time listeners, welcome, and to all of our former besties returning.
Welcome back to episode 198 of Back to the Best.
This is 199.
To episode 199 of Back to the Best.
This monumental step is monumental.
You guys, I said to David, are we like old in podcasting world because we have almost 200 episodes?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that shows consistency.
Yeah.
Hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Blood, sweat, and
we
tears.
We are nothing if we don't have our hard work. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
No, you mean. It's like what we always say. We are nothing. If not hard workers.
The hard workers. It's so hard to talk at the same time over Zoom.
You guys, Zoom, you know what we need to, who is anyone in the tech world that's listening? How do we get the right things to record on Zoom together? Does that make sense?
I think we just need to plug our mics into one computer and then we can do it.
That's probably really easy, isn't it?
Yeah. But I...
We hate hard work.
We're also thrilled to say for the first time this year, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas and happy holidays to everybody. This makes me think of something. So my husband, Timothy, he is one of those people who has a little bone to pick about the fact that Christmas is like already everywhere.
Yeah.
I obviously do not feel that way.
Tis
the season, you guys. He was saying today, it's like Thanksgiving doesn't have its own time. November doesn't have its own time. I don't agree because I just love everything that has to do with Christmas. I love the decorations. But I know that there's people that feel that way.
Yeah. And if you feel that way, you are with the wrong crowd right now.
You are listening to the wrong podcast. We'd also love it if you still listened, but it might not be the right one because we love Christmas.
Both of our trees are up.
Yeah. Yours was up this past weekend. We put ours up this past weekend.
I have two trees in my apartment.
Thank God.
Because Dustin and I couldn't agree on a color scheme for the tree. So we just each decorated our own.
Okay, what are the two color schemes?
Mine is very traditional. It's just it's a 6-foot tree. I'm going to get a bigger one this year sometime. So we will have three.
God bless.
But mine's just a traditional red, silver, white.
I love it. I think, is it the one you've had? That same tree? It's a very great tree.
And then his has some more like blues, golds. But you can't. But it was just going to be too many colors on one tree.
You really wish I was there for the conversation. I can just see you be like, because David is, guys, if you want to know one thing about David, he is very nice. He's the nicest person in the world. And I can just see you
being nice.
I really mean that.
Thank you.
Like very respectfully being like, so this is not the color scheme. Like, so this is just not it.
But
I love that you both just went, let's just each get our own tree.
And they're both just in the living room. We didn't even separate them.
Oh my God. Listen, we have white lights up all year round, like decorative lights. And there's just nothing warmer and more welcoming than a Christmas tree.
So warm. So welcoming.
More power to you. But yeah, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Another thing that I do for the holiday season to decorate is I have a bunch of Christmas albums that I frame. And I told you that I injured my shoulder last night.
Oh, yes. Okay, wait. What happened? Okay, wait, I have a question. Mm-hmm. Did it have to do with the Christmas decorating?
Yes.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm ready when you are.
So as you know, I'm really good with tools.
Oh my, so good. So good. Very, very Bob the Builder.
So I was all alone and I was like, oh, I'm gonna go ahead and do the Christmas vinyl wall. So we had a drill, which of course I've used so many times.
Just drilling away, David. Every time I'm like, oh, this broke. Let me call David.
And so I was doing really well. I was getting the Christmas vinyls hung. And then I went to go do the last one on the top right. And I went to push in on the screw. And then I pushed too hard and the thing slipped. And my arm went into the wall and my shoulder like popped out.
Oh my God. Okay. Oh my God. Sorry. I'm getting triggered because I've done that multiple times. And
it's the worst. I thought it was the end.
The shoulder dislocation, like a very treatable thing. And David's like, this is it. I can't come back.
But yeah, everything is fine. It's sore, but we're fine.
Because I'm assuming it obviously went back in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That is sore. I've done that. I've done that multiple times. Two times in my life, it didn't go back in.
Oh.
And I had to go to the ER.
Oh, God. Just the thought of like someone else having to pop it back in for you.
Awful. The second time, I don't remember it because I guess I had some medicine. They gave me something. I don't remember it. I don't remember a thing. The first time, though, it was actually very interesting. The doctor tied a bed sheet around his waist and there was a bed sheet around my waist and they literally pulled. I'm not. It's going to be gross.
Oh, my God.
They had
trigger warning.
Trigger warning. It was so that they could pull my arm away from my body and be able to angle it back in the right spot. And then I had to have surgery years later. What a fun thing. We have great shoulders here at BTTV. I'm really sorry that happened. That is very, very painful. And the
vinyl wall looks great, though.
Thank God. Thank God. Because we just can't have that in any associated with Christmas at all. It just can't be.
One thing that we are both very excited about is all the strikes are done.
Yes. Yes. A little clap. Clap for the strikes being done.
And so we never really knew what we could and couldn't do. So we just played it safe and just held on to several episodes because we don't have money. We don't have the money. We don't have the means to go against anyone. And we would never, even if we did have it. So we did have some episodes that we recorded this summer, like August.
I guess. Yeah. I think it was August. Yeah.
They were supposed to come out. One was coming out like the week that SAG went on strike, and then, you know, a few more after that. But we're very excited now that we can start sharing these interviews, including the one today with none other than Kim Rhodes, aka Zach and Cody's mom.
She starred in, of course, A Sweet Life of Zach and Cody. She also was in Supernatural, which David loves. She's got some great stories with the animals in her life right now. Mm-hmm. So we loved this episode. We really hope you do. She was exactly who we would have imagined. Like, you know how when you see people on TV, you're like, oh, are they like that in real life? She was so happy, so friendly, so nice. And yeah, we just love this episode and we hope you do too.
Without further ado, here she is, Kim Rhodes.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
How are you?
What a pleasure meeting you. Hi, it's Grace and David, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Hello, I'm Kim.
It's so nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thank you for doing this.
Oh my goodness, it's my pleasure, truly. Thank you.
We were just saying we're so excited. This is our first episode back in a little over 3 months because Grace just had a baby.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I know.
Was it your first, second, third, fourth? First one. Oh.
What if I was like my seventh?
I mean, again, no judgment. I'm too old to judge people's lives anymore. Yeah. Like, if it makes you happy, then you're doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. But no, she's my first.
Congratulations. What's her name?
Riley.
Yay, Riley. Welcome to the planet.
I know. She's so cute. It's been like a whirlwind because I've never been a parent before, but now I was just saying to my husband, we're like, okay, we kind of feel like we have a bit of a rhythm. The first month or two, forget it. I was like, what day is it? What's going on? It was chaos. Totally chaos.
Yeah. And every time you have a rhythm, they're going to learn something new and be one step ahead of you for the rest of your life.
Oh, yeah. We have
that'll be fun.
It keeps you on your toes. You never know what's coming. Right?
Yes. Yeah. I thought that like having a child was the culmination of something. And it turned out that was just, it was the, my entire life was just me getting to the starting line.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's well put. I get that. I totally get it. They keep you on your toes, but at least she's very cute, you know? So when she that's what makes it worth it, right? She has like one great night of sleep. The next one's nuts, but we're like, we wake up in the morning and we're like, you're just, look at you.
But look at you.
You're so cute. Yeah. But the older she's getting, the more of a person they become. So that's like, even they're just like little aliens. And like after the first week or two, they're just like little blobs.
Yeah. It's a meatloaf.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yes. That's a perfect one. Yeah. Yeah. We're so happy to be back.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Are you in LA?
I mean, no. I left Los Angeles about a year ago. I live outside of a town called Temecula.
Okay.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. I've heard of that. Like, yeah. There's a Saturday night. There's a character on Saturday Night Live that's like from Temecula. Yes, that's how people have heard of Temecula. I am outside of Temecula by like 20 minutes. When Temecula is the major metropolis I'm near, you can tell I left. I'm out. I'm done. Gone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Both David and I are in LA, but we're not from here. So like we kind of have the different experiences from like, I grew up on the East Coast, David from the Midwest, but now we're on the West Coast. So we have like a little bit of all of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was there from 99 to 2022. So I think I did my time. Yeah.
You did it.
Yeah. I had a good run. But also I was done.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Because you're originally from Oregon, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm actually there right now for the first time ever. I'm in Astoria right now.
Oh, on the bridge.
Yes.
The long bridge. Oh my gosh.
I drove over it today and I was like, this is the longest bridge I've ever been on.
Don't think about it. Don't think about it. Because if you're in the middle of it and you think about it, it's like Tinkerbell. It's just going to crash. Yeah. Astoria is beautiful. Are you going to go down the coast at all?
We're just here for a couple days visiting friends. So I don't think we're going to get a lot of time. Wednesday, we have all day before we fly back to Burbank. So we're going to like rent a car and drive as much as we can before we have to head to the airport.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've never been, but my mom went recently. She drove all over. She kind of did mom. Like, oh, she loves a road trip. Even like solo. She's a great solo traveler, but she said it was one of the most beautiful places.
It's beautiful. When we like finally agreed to pull up camp, I looked for places in Oregon that would fit because it is so stunning, but it just didn't fit our lives. And finally, my husband was able in a moment of blunt honesty to just say he couldn't take 6 months a year of rain.
Oh,
so I said, that's
fair.
Then we're not moving to Oregon.
Yeah. Not the place.
That is fair.
No.
And especially being in like California, if it rains for like a week, all of us are just like, what's happening?
I know. Stop. Where's the sun? I have seasonal affective disorder. Yeah.
After a week, all of us have it. We're like, oh my God.
Yeah. Vitamin D.
I know.
A little bit about us. So our podcast is called Back to the Best. We focus on all things 90s, early 2000s, and just all the things that we loved growing up, which you were a huge part of with Sweet Life of Zach and Cody.
My babies.
Yeah. So we appreciate this so much, you coming on and chatting with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've really, you know, I did a genre show for so long that it's funny now encountering like fully fledged grown adults that don't know me from that. They know me from when I was their childhood. And sure. So it's really fun being like, oh, that's right. You were a little person and now you're a big person and I'm still here.
It's one of our favorite things and kind of why we do this podcast, because when we get the opportunity to speak with people like yourself, we feel like our childhood selves again. And we kind of get to relive that. And then we see even people that listen, they'll comment and be like, oh my gosh. And everybody loves that feeling. It's like a very warm feeling to remember the shows you grew up with and get to speak with people that were on them. It's literally our dream.
Yeah.
Well, and I love the way that we get to connect with our audience now, because at the time mm-hmm. it was just like, you're a live studio audience or you read sure. about us. And now, I mean, I just got back from a convention where people that I was mom figure, I actually got to hug and I got aww. To look them in the face and I got to tell them I'm proud of them and they're turning out so beautifully and like really connect. So that's another reason that I love that you're doing this, because it facilitates me the opportunity to tell people they matter to aww. Me so deeply.
Oh, I love that. Aww. We want to ask you everything about Sue.
Ask me everything. Ask me everything. Well, I'll just try not to damage your childhood memories, but yes, ask me everything.
Listen, it's okay. We're adults now, right?
We can handle
it. We're adults. We've got it. But even just jumping back a bit, did you always want to be in the industry? Like when you were younger, was it always a dream of yours, or kind of how did you get started in the industry?
Well, you know, hindsight is an amazing thing. The story in hindsight has so much reality. At the time, I just knew I didn't know what I wanted, mm-hmm. but within, like, I didn't take an acting class until I was 19 years old. And then I did stage for 10 years. I just knew that it felt right. Something clicked in. I enjoyed having people clap for me. I enjoyed having people shut up because it was my turn to talk. I enjoyed being lauded for having big feelings. What I now know is that I was an undiagnosed autistic child who needed a sense. I needed to script. Mm-hmm. I needed a sense of what comes next. Like there's nothing better for the way I process as an autistic person than knowing I get to have big feelings and how the other person's going to respond to them.
Sure.
But I didn't know that's what I was doing at the time. At the time, I just thought, hey, I found this thing that I seem to be pretty good at. Mm-hmm. And it's okay if I'm awkward and make things weird, because that's expected of me as an artist. Yay. And so yeah. I just stepped into it. But it wasn't really, I've been called as a child. It was more, oh, I found something where I don't have to wear clothes that are too tight.
It clicked, you know?
Yeah.
Which I kind of love that, because we ask people that question because everybody seems to have a different answer. Like some people are like, oh, I was watching a movie when I was 3 and I remember I wanted to be in the television, but then everyone's kind of journey is different and their story is different. Yeah. Yeah, and it's such a creative outlet. So like creative people, I feel like all have different reasons why they might want to get started in something, and it's not an easy industry to get into. So no. we love to hear kind of what inspired them.
Yeah, it was less focused on a goal and more focused on the experience and the step that's in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I just keep taking the step that's in front of me. And at some point I'll be like one of the things about this industry is nobody gives you a pink slip. Nobody tells you when you're done. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking around now where I'm a little like, I am not dead yet, but apparently I need to find something else to do. Okay. But it's always been like that, where I was like, oh, I think I'm done. Oh, I'm going to be on this show for 10 years. All right. Yeah. Okay. You know,
here we
nobody
go.
Tells you what to expect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When did you decide to make the move then to Los Angeles?
Well, I went from Oregon. So I went to college. I got a BFA in Southern Oregon. And then I went to Philadelphia to get an MFA. And then I moved up to New York with a very brief hiatus in Spring Green, Wisconsin. So then I moved up to New York, and it was in 99. I was on a soap opera that was canceled. And I thought, if I'm going to try to, because I couldn't sing and dance, and New York is really, was especially at that time, very Broadway oriented.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I was not Broadway caliber. So I said, I am going to move to LA while I'm still young enough to possibly have something happen. So that's why I moved to LA. And I had a few brutal years. And so I went away and did Shakespeare in Southern Oregon for a season. And then I went back and I auditioned for some pilots, but I was pretty sure I was just going to like pack it in LA and mm-hmm. just move to Southern Oregon and do Shakespeare for the rest of my life. And that's when I booked Sweet Life. But I was so ambivalent about Sweet Life. I was so like, I've got plans that are not this.
Yeah.
So, And that seemed to be very attractive to them. They were like, you don't want us? Come back.
Well, now we want you even more.
Yeah.
Did you have any like interest in Disney Channel? Like, was there anything, or was it just an audition? It was just an audition.
I didn't have a shot. Okay. Truth be told, we shot the entire pilot and I thought it took place in Vegas because I couldn't understand why a lounge singer would be given a suite at a hotel in a city that
in Boston
clearly has a lot of other lounge singers that live there. Like I didn't have a kid. I was a cartoon, like I was the old, I liked the Warner Brothers cartoon. So I wasn't even aware of the children's programming. I didn't, I knew nothing. I just showed up and was kind of like, I'm doing my thing. Okay.
I feel like that worked because at the time you were like the coolest mom on the Disney Channel.
Oh, without a doubt.
Thank you. That it was none of my doing. It was just me being my weird little self. People were asking, how did you get, what about that haircut? I'm like, that's because I cut my own hair and they couldn't stop me from cutting my own hair. I still do. That's why like, I wanted the back to be shorter than the front, and the back is much shorter than the front. I'm very impulsive, and so that hairstyle was like a happy medium, so they didn't have to keep changing my hairstyle, but I could keep cutting it when I wanted to.
Wow, I feel like it really fit though. Like I would have thought that was a character like a choice for them. Yeah.
It was fun until Guy Fieri came along and then I got all the memes of then and now. No. And they'd be like, Brenda Song on Sweet Life. Brenda Song now. Ashley Tisdale on Sweet Life. Ashley Tisdale now. Kim Rhodes on Sweet Life. And then it would be a picture of Guy Fieri. And I'm like, it was funny the first 82 times I saw it, but now I'm tired of that.
83, no, absolutely not.
Yeah. We draw the line at 83.
Too many.
Oh my gosh. Well, I haven't seen those, if that helps.
Oh, well, they're like 10 years old. That was back when I first got on social media.
Okay.
And people thought, it's fun. You know what's funny? Let's make fun of people. Fine, I guess.
Not Guy Fieri.
Yes, I know. Roadside attractions.
Having done then live theater, do you feel like that helped you a lot then filming in front of a studio audience for Sweet Life?
Yes. It especially for a comedy, because there's a rhythm that you get into when it's just you and another actor with a comedy. But when you add a people laughing at it, you need to know when to hold for that laughter so it becomes a third member of the scene and use that as part of the storytelling, as opposed to moving, I've got to stop and get, like it can either be a part of the rhythm or it can interrupt the rhythm. Mm-hmm. And already walking into it where I knew how to make it a part of the rhythm and sometimes even use it because there's this, it's a high when you get a laugh and it peaks and it starts to go away, but you know if you just ride it, Brian Stepanek was good at this. You can, Arwen always would have these. It would peak and it would start to go away, but if you just tweaked for a second, you had to come up again, and then people would start like that giddy sort of, I'm laughing at other people laughing and I don't even know why I'm laughing. And I get, it's just, it's glorious. So yeah, that was something that I definitely had in my corner when I stepped onto that show.
Did you guys, the answer is probably yes. Cause David and I, like we used to work at Warner Brothers. So we've seen kind of how the audience works and we've heard how one of the best parts about filming in front of an audience is you get an instant reaction, maybe for the writers as well. Did this work or did this not? Did you guys have a lot of moments where you would go through the scene and maybe the audience didn't love it? So there were rewrites like on the spot at the time, or did they kind of stick to the script that they already had?
They would rewrite through the course of the week because mm-hmm. we would get it on Monday and we'd do a table read. And that's really when the dramatic, like, whoa, that seemed, that worked in my head, not so much. So the rewrites on the fly in front of the audience, very minimal. I think also because it was a kid's show. And so to rewrite, especially Disney Channel, you had to go up a major chain of command to get an approval to have it back, because it was a corporation. So there were other shows that I'd worked on that were adult shows where it was much, much looser. They're like, hey, let's try this, or hey, this might be funnier. And it was much more experimental. But Disney Channel's not known for their experimental freedoms that they gave the people who worked for them.
That makes sense. That's why I was wondering. I was like, did you guys get to do that? Or was it more like, this is the script, put it on the stage?
Yeah, it needed to be approved by a lot of different stamps.
Got it.
So by Friday, we didn't do a lot of, that's the same reason also there wasn't a lot of extemporaneous improv, because all it takes is one letter and we're in trouble.
That's it.
So yeah, we used to joke about that. We're like, oh, you can't do that. We'll get a letter. Not like even you'll get letters. It was one letter and we were in trouble.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. They're not worth it.
Yeah. So yeah.
Leave the script alone. Not worth it. We don't need a letter.
Yeah.
Speaking of like Disney executives, we saw online that you were threatened with a swear jar on set. Is that true?
It was not an executive. Okay. So the story, yes, it was definitely not an executive. It was a very well-meaning person who took their job very, possibly a little too seriously. Mm-hmm. And yes, they instituted a swear jar that they would keep and tried unsuccessfully. Only it was just for me. Am I
just a kid swear jar?
Sorry, the Teamsters aren't also cussing, but no, it was just for Kim. And it was one of my earliest experiences with Dylan and Cole when I was like, oh, we're going to be good. Mm-hmm. Where I said something and this individual held up the swear jar and shook their finger at me. And I'm crumbling inside. I'm like, I just assume anybody who isn't me has the power to tell me what I should be doing. Mm-hmm. And Cole goes, we've worked with Adam Sandler. And Dylan goes, yeah, we've heard them all already. I think she's fine. And I was like,
you're like, okay.
Okay, you guys are cool.
This could work.
Those little fuckers said I could swear.
Oh, and how old were they, do you think, at the time that they said
this
that?
Was the first season. This was like the third episode. Young. Yes, because this individual did not remain on our set.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
The person with the swear jar. So that person did not stay very long. There were all sorts of reasons that it was not a good fit. But yeah, they were still like maybe 12 when they said this. They were like, they defended me all the way through. I got pregnant when I was on the show. And of course the show dealt with it by making fat jokes. And one of my favorite memories is Dylan had a line that was a fat joke and he just kept skipping over it. It was like in the middle of a chunk of dialogue. So he kept skipping this laugh line and skipping it and skipping it and skipping it. And finally we get to in front of the studio audience and he skips it. And the executive producer screams, it's like, cut. And it's the director's job to cut, by the way. So he goes, cut, Dylan, say the line. And he goes, I would not disrespect any woman that way, let alone this woman. You write something funny and I'll say it.
Good for him. Oh my God.
That's my little man. They're both my little men. Yeah. Yeah, they both were very protective of everyone on set. It wasn't just me. They understood that like early on, Phil was like, look, you are the only two people on the set that are not expendable. So you take the bullet every time. And they took that so seriously. It would be so easy for a 12-year-old to be like, the prop didn't work, it's their fault. Yeah. And they always were like, no, I didn't say, I'm sorry, I'll work with Jeff on it. I'll do this, I wasn't where I was supposed to be. I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. And so the fact that they at such a young age understood mm-hmm. that it was their job to make sure everybody else was able to do their job was really impressive.
Yeah, that's like a whole level of maturity you can't teach kids.
Yeah.
You can't. You can't. Yeah. And they were exceptional about that.
Well, that's so, I love hearing that. And, you know, because we've heard the phrase like, you know, the number one person on the call sheet or like the top person
yeah.
and how they kind of maybe do carry some of that weight because they can set the tone very easily for everybody else. And it sounds like they understood that and was also like, we're not just going to be the little kids that just stand by and let it happen. They took it seriously, which yes. is amazing.
Well, and I think we, because Phil and I, and then Beth, who was the assistant director, and Rich, who was our frequent director, also took them seriously. It was also important that they were told that they had power. Like so sure. often, young actors are told you don't have power. You do what we tell you to do. You comply, you conform, you mm-hmm. say yes. And so then when kids mess around and they're told, why are you doing this? You're doing yeah. it. They're like, but people told me I didn't have any power. If I don't have any power, then how do I have the power to mess things up? Whereas on this set, it was understood that all four of our guest cast mm-hmm. had the power of equals. At least that was my intention. I'm sure there were times when I probably subconsciously contributed them to them not feeling like an equal. And I would like to, if that were the case, make amends for that because I didn't know any better. But I know that it was something Phil and I felt very, and Beth and Rich felt very, that we needed them to feel safe. We wanted them to feel held. We didn't want them to feel the fear of adulthood, but also to be like, no, you are powerful entities creating in your own right. Let's do this together. You're partners. It's a collaboration.
Yeah, collaborate. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Collaborative. Yeah. That's awesome.
Well, and especially I feel like you hear stories of, you know, child actors growing up, the pressures that they were under, and, you know, the stories of people who party all the time. And I feel like nobody from that cast, at least publicly, mm-hmm. had any issues. And I feel like that has to come from how everyone on set treated them.
Well, you know, there's this saying that is not mine, but I'm going to say it, where it's very difficult to have 100% of the responsibility and 0% of the power. Mm-hmm. Right? And so often kids are not given any power because adults are scared that the kids might not make the choice they want them to. Mm-hmm. So kids are manipulated. They are coerced. They are only given half the truth because I need to give you the impact because the adult is attached to the child's conformity. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that happens in any workplace. The people making the money are attached to the conformity of the people making them the money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But within that, we individually had the capacity to be like, I see you. I see you. I see you. I got you. We're the emotional side of it. I can't do anything about who's taking your residuals, but yeah. I can do everything about the fact that I see you for who you are and I love you for who you are. Wow. And this cast specifically was able to do that in spite of clunks and bumps and learning, you know,
yeah.
lessons are painful. And so we learned with each other, but I think there was incredible levels of love.
That makes us so happy to hear.
Yeah, I know.
It's nice to be able to say, let me tell you.
Sure, I bet.
Yeah. And I think it came across on screen too, because everyone's chemistry was infectious. Like it was such, that's why the show did so well. People can tell by watching something, like that's what makes it successful or not. And it seemed like the flow of the show and everybody's relationships to each other were just perfect.
It was also more important, like one of the things, this is another Dylan story. So I'm taller than them, right? And Cole would do it too. So the way it's set up is there's three cameras, right? So if the boys and I are having a conversation. One camera's on me, and then the other camera's on them, and then the middle's on both of us. But the lights are back here, and I'm taller. So my job is to make sure that I'm not standing in their light. I don't shade them. So we would have dances because the boys would deliberately step into the shade because they didn't want the light in their eyes. And then I would lean to the side so that they were lit. And then they would then step and forget. And we would just like gradually move our way out of camera. And I would always get blamed. Like, Cam, you lost your spot. I'm like, and they would both be like,
you're like, they keep moving. So then I have to move.
that was more important. Like the silly, lovely dance was more important than we're making a TV show. It was just, how can we lived to make Beth Carell, our assistant director. We lived to make her laugh. Yeah. Like that was our goal. We didn't care if we got the whole audience. We didn't care if we got the executives. We didn't care. If we got Beth to laugh, we won.
Aim it at Beth.
Yes. Yeah.
Something I've always been curious about, whenever you guys would do like the big crossover episodes with That's So Raven, Hannah Montana, did it feel different for you or was it just another episode?
Oh, David, bless your heart. I was an adult. I didn't have to do shit.
Great.
They were like, if you would please stay out of the shot because we have all the important people in there. It didn't make a lick of difference to me. Nothing. Because they didn't need me anyway. My entire job was to show up and go, kids, don't do the thing, and then go away. And then come in at the end and go, kids, you did the thing. Here's the lesson we've all learned. It didn't matter if I was doing it to 82 kids or two.
But you rocked it. Every time you did it, it was great. You nailed it.
Thanks.
Did you have like a favorite episode looking back on it? One that always stands out in your mind?
Yes. And it's a very sad reason why. So just prepare your trigger warning. I'm going to cry. So there is an episode called Birdman of Boston where Cody finds a hawk and he raises this hawk and he wants to give the hawk to the sanctuary, but he ends up letting the hawk fly free. And there's a whole conversation about what it is to be a mother and how you hope that by the time you're no longer there, your being can exist on its own. That episode was written by Jim Gagan, one of the two executive producers, as a gift to me after my mother died.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. He wrote that because he wasn't a touchy feely guy, but I was a wreck. My mom was my person. Oh. And they all were with me when she made it to the set. They all got to meet her. Oh. And then I left and I was with her when she died. She died up in Oregon, but that was Jim's gift to me. As a tribute to my mom, was a beautiful story of motherhood. Mm. And so that's the one that just is sacred to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
Mm. Well, we're so sorry about your mom. Yeah. Thank you for sharing.
Oh, thank you. It was a very long time ago. These things happen. Mm-hmm. But it also was a beautiful thing to see like these kids support me. I mean, show up as themselves and be present and love me through some really painful experiences. And they did. Mm-hmm. It was awesome. So I'm grateful. Gosh. I was where I was when it happened.
Mm-hmm. Right. Sounds like it was kind of meant to be because these things do happen, like you said, but at least you had everybody there and this special episode that you'll always have.
Yeah.
I mean, that also just goes to show how close and great this cast and crew was.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, it was pretty magical.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and then I also love Supernatural.
So. Hey, thank you.
So
I know they gave mom a gun and this is what happened. Yeah.
Yeah, you just moved over to two new boys over on Supernatural.
I mean, it is. It's my look. I say stick with what you know. And what I know is working with good looking blonde brothers. I mean, everybody's got to have a niche. And this is mine.
There you go. Whenever you started in Supernatural, then obviously your character pops up in every season after season five. Did you know that you would be recurring, or whenever you started, was it just like a one or two episode thing?
It was, I was there for probably 6 years before I believed them when they told me they'd warn me if I was dying. They'd be like, hey, is Kim available? I'm like, I don't know. Let me see the script.
Yeah. Let me just.
Am I dying? I don't know. In fact, there was an episode where Crowley and Jody go on a date, and they never say if the boys got to her in time. And it was the end of the season, and in the script it didn't say if I lived or died, and I was convinced I was dead.
That was
because everybody else was gone. Nobody could tell me. I was like, I guess this is my last episode. They're like, it's not your last episode. You didn't die.
Like, enough, Kim. You're still here.
Yes.
What, I mean, obviously that has to be such a huge different experience from filming like on the Disney Channel.
Well, it's what the biggest difference was just the style going from a multicam where you get the luxury of rehearsing and finding your timing and finding routines and experimenting it to a single camera where they're like, look, the sun goes down in 18 seconds. Uh-huh. So get this in. Like, you need to, you're out in the middle of the, you're no out pressure. In the rain, and you're in the woods, and you're, it's a different kind of extreme fun. But that was the biggest difference, was just getting used to single camera, where I was like, oh, but I just had an idea. No ideas for you. We've already shot the master. But I know how to. Nope. No more experimenting. You do it that same way for the next 2 days.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wait. That's so true.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no experimenting in single camera. Once it's on, you're. That's it. That's your take. That's it. That's how you do it.
So okay. So you say that you shoot the master. So you do the scene. Yeah. As a whole first, and then like all the different angles, like the different close-ups and stuff like that after?
It all depends on the situation. Okay. Sometimes it's easiest to shoot somebody's coverage first. Sometimes it's easy. Like, it all depends on what's the most convenient for cameras. That also means you shoot it way out of sequence. And Sweet Life, you got to shoot like a play. So you knew what came, but you know what your run up is, you know where, whereas my very first scene on Supernatural was everyone I know and love burning on a funeral pyre. Oh, ready, go! Welcome to the show.
What a warm welcome.
Oh my gosh.
Hey.
So nice.
It should be easy.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. When I hear those things, I give you guys so much credit, because it's like, how do you just turn that on when you have nothing, you've no like moment before, you're just like, because they're not in order.
Yeah,
you just like came out of, I don't know, the hair and makeup trailer, and now you're like dumped into this crazy situation without any lead up.
Yep, you just have to really imagine hard. I play pretend very hard.
How was it going into a show then that had already been running for five seasons versus starting a show at season one?
It was, I mean, because I didn't know I was going to be back. That's what I was mostly used to. I'd only been on two series regulars. I was a series regular on a soap opera and then The Sweet Life. Everything else was 1 week here, 1 week here, 1 week here, 1 week here. Like hop, 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 hop. That's how I made most of my money. So I was very used to that. I was very used to come in, head down, know your lines, do your job, book it out. At best, somebody will be like, hey, you were great. We should have you back sometime. And you go, that's such a sweet thought. And then it never happens. Never. But you appreciate the, I've never actually been on something where somebody then a year later was like, we're going to have you come back. Is it right? This is Kim Rhodes. Did you mean to call me?
Did you have the right Kim?
Is that the right thing? Okay. Sure.
Cool. There.
Yeah.
Well, and I feel like the Supernatural fans are very dedicated. Like, do you still do appearances at all the different Supernatural conventions?
Yes. In fact, I will be in San Francisco with the creation. They have full Supernatural conventions still.
That's great.
That's awesome.
It's, well, because over COVID, a whole new generation discovered it on Netflix.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So they are, and again, it's another thing, the same thing as Sweet Life. It starts from the top down. Mm-hmm. So when the top is committed to their product and their audience, there you create an environment where some magic can happen.
Mm-hmm. And do you still keep in contact with like any cast members from either show?
Oh, we have Sam Smith, who plays Mary, is texted me twice while we were talking.
Aww.
Like,
aww. Tell her we love her.
So yeah, the supernatural, because we see each other at these conventions, we have group threads. We see each other very frequently, again, because of the conventions. The kids I don't see because they were kids when I worked with them. And sure. So I often tell people when they're like, oh, you don't keep in contact. I'm like, think about your favorite teacher in middle school. Think about your favorite teacher. Now, as much as you love them, probably not still in contact with them.
Still not texting all the time.
So that's where, so I follow them on social media. Mm-hmm. I see what they're doing. My heart swells. If I ever saw any of them, I would clutch them to me and sob with love and pride. And I mean, any of them. Mm-hmm. But I don't have their numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't send them. I don't send them memes.
Yeah. Did you watch any of Riverdale at all?
I saw bits of it because it was a CW show. And I petitioned to play Jughead's mother when it turned out Jughead's mother was going to show up. They weren't even interested.
Oh, no.
They didn't even think it was worth it to let me read for it. And I was
rude.
Like, really? Come on. I wouldn't have been bad. Like, this is also apples and oranges. I wouldn't have, like, God bless. And well done. This is not me saying, oh, I would have done it better. She fucking killed it. But I still think they could have at least entertained the option.
Yeah, that's super rude.
I know. Whatever. What can you do?
Now I'm just picturing it. It would have worked so well. Because David and I both watch Riverdale.
Well, we joked about if there could have been a crossover episode where Jody and Jughead... And I said, it would have been awesome where they would nothing. The only thing there would have been acknowledgement is them walking past each other and both going, no. And that would have been it.
It would have been so good.
And it like, would have been hilarious. Been so just good. Like the audience would have been like, it's the moment. And they just would have been, and then keep right on why. And that's it.
I know. Oh, the show's over and I'm still crushed.
I know.
This. Like, can't we make it happen?
Yeah.
Are you currently working on anything or any projects coming up?
I love you for asking that. I volunteer at an animal rescue, so I'm currently working on not being killed by a small angry chicken. Mm-hmm. I'm currently working on making sure that there's an amount of goat poop that gets swept up in a timely manner. I'm working on finding kittens' homes.
Aww.
I did write a children's book.
Oh, nice.
It is in the final stages of being illustrated and will be sold through the merch company that I work with, which is Stams.
Oh, that's so exciting.
S-T-A-N-D-S.
Yeah.
Probably early next year, maybe in time for Christmas, but probably early next year.
Okay.
You'll have to let us know.
But no, I don't, like I said, there's no pink slip in this industry. It's just gradually you look around and no one wants to hire you. Like, but I'm done. Okay. I mean, who knows? I might come out of retirement at some point,
sure.
But right now there's nobody knows who, no, there's nothing going on. I got to do Kung Fu. I did a few episodes of Kung Fu on CW.
Oh, nice.
Because Robert Behrens, who is the executive producer, brought me in for that. And bless him for getting me health insurance.
Oh.
So that was, yeah. But I think that may have been my swan song. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll find out. Certainly nothing on the horizon.
Have you always been a huge animal person?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Somebody caught me today. I sing to all of them and I talk to all of them because I don't have to figure out how they're responding. Again, autistic brain, happy place, because I don't have to figure animals out. I don't have to be like, what did you mean by that, chicken?
Yeah.
I know exactly what he meant by that. He meant die. Right. So I sing to them and they don't mind. I cuddle them. I love my, I've got one goat that I would give a kidney to if he asked, even if he just wanted to eat it. And one of my pigs, it comes and like runs to me, which is and he runs squealing, which is adorable.
That's so cute.
Beep, 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 beep. So yeah, I have always been an animal person. Mm-hmm. My first paid job was working in a vet's office. Mm-hmm. I am my friend Brianna, who plays Sheriff Donna, laughs at me. She's like, you cannot be in a conversation with Kim if a dog goes around. You just need to remember where you were and try to pick up later. Because if there's a dog,
she's out.
You could be explaining how to disarm a bomb and Kim will still go pay attention to the dog.
I kind of feel that.
Yeah, we all have our priorities.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're exactly where you should be.
Yeah.
I keep trying to tell myself there's still a great deal of fear. And there's still, every time I think I've wrestled my ego into submission, bitch comes back with more ideas. So it's very, like, on the one hand, I don't think I've ever been happier. And on the other hand, there's still that voice of ego going, yeah, but nobody wants you. And so what a great place to be in life where I can look at that and go, hi, untrue. Mm-hmm. That's not true. I am. And like I said, I go to these conventions and there are people who weep because I can see them and hug them and tell them I'm grateful that they took the time to come say hi. So that ego of nobody wants you is lying. It's just ascribing to societal norms that don't apply to me anyway. So shut up and walk away. But it's still the voice is still there. But I thank you for pointing out that I am exactly where I'm supposed to be, because I do generally believe that.
And listen, you can just take it one day at a time. You never know. There's 100%. There's no ruling anything out. You're where you are right now, but who knows what could happen?
Yeah, and you know what I found, and this is my moment of TED Talk for your listeners, is if I let myself be happy today, it will always be today, and eventually I would have been happy all my life.
Oh my God, I love that.
So I just have to make sure that I don't let tomorrow define whether or not today made me happy.
Oh my gosh. Okay, we need to type that up, make it a post.
Seriously. We're already going that to clip out.
Yeah. It's going to be our merch. Yeah.
It's all yours.
Just Kim's quote.
Yeah. Kim's soapbox.
You know, I love it so much. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's absolutely my pleasure. This really was delightful. Good to meet you and have a good rest of your day and good have fun with baby.
Thank you.
Yay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
I just have to say, how fitting is it? Obviously, we didn't plan to release Kim's episode now because we were supposed to release it back in August. But how fitting that it's coming out the same week that Zach and Cody's reservation is ready.
I think it's just meant to be. Dare we say this is the reason that the strikes ended? The strikes ended because they knew that we were holding on to this episode. I mean, do we say that? I don't know.
If you don't know what we're talking about, there's an episode of The Sweet Life of Zach and Cody where they go to a restaurant, they try to make a reservation, and they're like, it will be ready on November 16th. And they're like, great. And then they're like, of 2023.
You guys, it is, well, if you're listening to this on release day, November 16th of 2023. This is it.
I saw even like the official Disney Channel Twitter posted about it this week. Everybody's very excited. But, and by the time this comes out, maybe we'll know. I'm curious if Dylan and Cole will post about it.
Oh, I know. I mean, I feel like they have to. Mm-hmm. It's like when even in like Back to the Future, when like they made references of stuff and now we're living those days. This is it is now. It is funny, though, when you see like them make a reference, like we would have flying cars and all these things. And we still don't.
Aren't there supposed to be flying cars? I saw that something got approved to test out some flying cars.
Where's the approval? We'll sign whatever you need us to sign for the flying cars.
It's going to be so, so messy when it comes out.
Oh, my God. The air is not ready. No, the sky is not ready.
And I mean, speaking of, since we're in this world of, you know, Disney Channel and things that will happen eventually, we are not far off from the year when Xenon goes to space, because that was set in 2049.
Okay, that's not far off at all.
No.
I guess we have to go to space then.
I guess
though.
We're going to space. Who's going to be protozoa?
Zoom, zoom, zoom.
Like my hot goat.
Boom, boom,
my supernova girl.
Anyway, if maybe after you listen to this episode, just go watch some Suite Life. Just take yourself back there, because when we recorded this episode, I felt like mentally I was instantly taken back to when I was watching the show.
And it's on Disney Plus, so you have no
it's
excuse.
Right there. It's right there on Disney Plus. We just, oh my gosh, I always think, and this is obviously why we do this podcast, I always think that my younger self would be flipping out knowing that we got to talk to her.
This was definitely one of those that I felt that.
Yeah, you really, really do. And Kim was, like we said, just so amazing, so nice, so bubbly, so friendly, and had just amazing things to say. It's always so great to hear. Like, she just spoke so highly of Dylan and Cole and just working with them. And
yeah,
you just love hearing that as a fan of that show, that they really did have that friendship behind the scenes.
And of course, she mentioned, you know, the goats and some animals that she's very passionate about. You can go see her videos with these animals on her Instagram. She is at Kim Rhodes for reals.
For reals. She's not playing. She's for reals.
And like the beginning of her bio is Zach and Cody's mom, Sam and Dean's friend.
Listen, she is Zach and Cody's mom.
She is.
And she always will be.
And we can't thank her enough for coming on and talking to us. And we also can't thank you enough for listening.
Oh my God. We're just very, very thankful. It is November. It is the month to be thankful. And we'd be even more thankful if you gave us a quick, there it is. If you gave us just a little tiny follow, it's very easy. It's super small, super quick. It's also super free to do. It doesn't cost you anything. You can find us. We're pretty much at BTTB Podcast everywhere, but on, you know, Facebook, on TikTok, just go ahead and look up Back to the Best. But if you want to make it very easy on yourself, our website is www.bttbpodcast.com. Everything's there. You can see our episodes, our guests, a little bit about us. Leave us a comment or 5-star review. Write to us. We'll accept any and all outreach. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you again for listening. And thank you in advance for tuning in next week. Where we are going to keep taking you
back to the best. Bye.
Bye.
No one loves when we nail a transition more than you and me.